Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Wow, welcome back to Hack the Entrepreneur. I am so glad you decided to join me again, and we have an awesome show. My name is John Naster, but you can call me Johnny. Today's entrepreneur is a communications strategist, killer copywriter, online entrepreneur, and a blogger. She is the founder and brains of Marketing Moxie, a company that is all about ditching the cookie cutter approach to copywriting, content, and communications. She works hands-on with entrepreneurs at every stage in their business to use marketing and copy that converts and puts money into your pocket. With 15 years of experience working in the trenches with companies of all sizes, from huge brands to solopreneurs, she brings an approach to content and communication strategy that's based on experience along with proven success. Now, let's hack Meggie Patterson. Welcome to the show, Meggie.
Hey, thanks for having me, John.
Oh, it's great. It's really, really great to have a fellow Canadian back on the show.
Yeah, we as Canadians need to stick together so no one makes fun of us.
Okay, let's jump right into this, Meggie.
I'm ready. Let's do it.
All right. Can you tell me specifically what you do as an entrepreneur that you think other people don't that has been a big contributor to your success?
I think the biggest thing for me is I'm super realistic about my goals and really just trying to always merge that dreaming with practicality. I would definitely chalk that up to the fact that I'm a Libra, not to get all woo-woo, but I do have this great blend of being able to make things very practical, very bite-sized, but finding a way to make your dream actually realistic. So I think a lot of times we tend to go one of two ways, right? We're either like, oh my gosh, this is never going to happen. And we're so stuck in the tactics of it that we don't stop to think bigger. And then on the other side, or we're super, super, super creative and we're really unable to put that into action and actually make it happen. And I think a lot of entrepreneurs, we fall into the creative dreamer category. So making things that reality in a way that's going to work with our lives and our business is actually way more challenging than most people realize.
I find with entrepreneurs, lots of times it just gets thrown on us, or we're not sure where it kind of started. We just all of a sudden realize, oh, wow, I'm an entrepreneur. When did this start, sort of thing? Can you tell me about the first business you ever started?
My very first business was, I was 7 years old. And, you know, as a kid in the late 70s, early 80s, we used to have all this penny candy. And I used to be quite obsessed with it because, hey, what kid doesn't want to fill up a bag of stuff for a quarter or whatever it was? And, you know, my allowance only went so far. And my parents were like, well, you're going to have to earn it. And I'm like, well, how's a 7 year old going to earn money? So I had this really awesome wagon my father had built. And we had this really awesome hill right by our house. And I mean, in hindsight, I look at that hill and I want to throw up because I can't believe I did this. But so I basically started a service for the neighborhood kids. And I lived in one of those crazy neighborhoods where there was like literally feral children everywhere. And, you know, kids with money to burn who wanted a thrill experience. So I gave them one of two options. You can go for a wagon ride around the block for 10 cents, or I can put you in the wagon and throw you down the hill and see what happens. That was more of the thrill ride. And my business lasted all of about 48 hours until I was promptly shut down by the tyranny of some parents who thought this was A, dangerous, and B, yeah, I was out of line charging 10 cents for it. But from there, I always, like, as I think back to being a kid, I was always coming up with ideas. I remember being like 10 and, you know, oh, we weren't going to have a lemonade stand. My friend and I were going to have a restaurant. I always had that we need to create businesses because I want to be creating and serving and making money in the process. So, you know, years later, I really didn't embrace being an entrepreneur and using that kind of terminology. And I'd actually had a business for a long time. And then all of a sudden I was like, oh, Maggie, stop fighting it. You are an entrepreneur. I think if you're creating and you're willing to be in business for yourself, you know, whether you admit it or not, you truly are an entrepreneur.
7 years old. That's impressive. And
yeah, my 10-year-old doesn't have that kind of drive.
Your 10-year-old? No.
No,
It's hard. It's really hard.
Yeah, he's more into the like, hey, mom, can I help you mail some stuff out? He definitely like has that drive to want to create money so he can buy apps in the iTunes store. But aside from that, I don't know. It's a different generation.
It is, totally. And especially when you mentioned the penny candy. Oh, I used to love that stuff too. And trying to just explain that to my daughter, who's 9, like, go to the store and like everything's 5 cents or 10 cents or 25 cents. And it's like, for a penny, we used to be able to get a candy for 50 cents. You got a like little bag of candy. And
yeah, I think my son thinks I'm lying when I tell him that kind of stuff. He's like, mom, I don't believe you. It doesn't seem possible that those gummy worms could have been so cheap.
Exactly. Exactly. Awesome, Maggie. So let's move on to habits. Can you walk us through your morning routine, say the first 30 minutes of your work day?
I'm going to be really honest. My work day is one of two ways. And this is because my husband works shift work. So if my husband is not home, my morning routine generally is, you know, that first 30 minutes is very much focused on my son and getting him out the door. So, you know, making lunch, making sure he puts on his socks and brushes his teeth and all those kind of things. And then I try to give myself a little bit of time to just relax and kind of collect my thoughts for the day. I generally actually physically write out a to-do list, look at my calendar, all that kind of stuff. If my husband is home, I generally will just, you know, won't do a lot of that parenting type stuff. And I cut right into that to-do list. And I might do early calls that day to just kind of get into my day earlier so that, you know, come 4 o'clock, I don't have to work until later on or not at all anymore. So every day is a little bit different. I'm not a super rigid schedule kind of person. I that's the creative part. I like to be, see where the day takes me.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. Although you're a step ahead of me with the writing down a to-do list, that's for sure. And something,
The key to the to-do list is to make it fun for yourself. So for I have all these like awesome colored pens and big post-it notes. It seems way more exciting than just writing it in a book.
Oh, that's true. I know it's something I need to do. It's something I don't do. So let's move into this. That's a habit that I'm trying to develop because I know I need it, but I'm terrible at it. Is there a habit that you are trying to develop, but you're struggling to adopt into your life?
Oh,
just one.
Honestly, for me, the biggest one is it's like a health one, but just making sure I take that time to take a break because I love my work. So sometimes I get a little obsessive and I need to get up and move around and make sure I eat lunch. And I mean, I used to hate this. People say, oh, I forgot to eat lunch. I'm like, how can you forget to eat lunch? Yeah, it totally happens. So I do have timers set like in my calendar that say, okay, Maggie, it's noon Eastern. It's time to take 30 or 40 minutes away. Go, you know, if you need to go for a walk around the block, go get the mail, you know, actually eat something to nourish your body and your brain. So, I mean, that is such a struggle. I really would rather just be like me and my laptop hanging out.
It's one of those things that you think is never going to happen, like that you'll like forget lunch. I do it now all the time because I'm so into what I'm doing. And it's so hard when you're either just working at a job you're not really into or just working on stuff you don't. It's hard to imagine. You think, oh, sure, you forget lunch or sure, you forget that. It's like literally my 8 or 10 hours just goes by and it's like, oh my God, I got to get out of this chair. I got to go outside. Like, but
exactly. And like, oh, the sun, I remember that.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy. I was talking to somebody yesterday, like sometime late in the afternoon on Skype, and they're like, oh, how's the weather up there? And I'm like, you know what? I have no idea. The blinds are closed. I haven't been outside all day. I got to get off this call and I got to go outside because summer's slipping away up here.
Yeah. And to be honest, like I'm so grateful I have my son because it makes me stop. It makes me focus. You know, I'm like, okay, now we're going to go check out what's happening in the garden. Or, you know, he's been at home a lot of the summer. So I'm like, okay, this morning we're going to the library. Like, so that I actually have that time and distance. I'm very good at taking vacations, but if I'm home, I'm in like total work, taking over the world mode.
Right, which has its pluses and its minuses, right? So that's definitely a struggle that I think we all deal with working for ourselves and working from home. because it can just get caught up in just overtaking you sort of. But what's your favorite part of this lifestyle you've designed of being able to work from home and on a laptop?
Okay, so it's a two-parter. Is number one, I never have to go to the office and wear pantyhose. Because when I used to work in an agency, I mean, it was quite formal. I had suits and pantyhose. And then eventually I kind of rebelled and I was like, I don't do pantyhose anymore. It's bare legs or tights. And, you know, I'm sure for men, they're like, whatever. But pantyhose are very oppressive. And then the second part is that I can take my vacations whenever I want. If we want to take 4 weeks off in February, I just need to figure out how to make it happen versus ask, you know, putting in that vacation request slip, holding your breath. Oh, I hope so-and-so hasn't asked for vacation at the same time. So my time away from the business, not connected to the internet, you know, doing things as a family, exploring, traveling, we're able to do that in a way that works for us. And I think for me, that's probably the biggest benefit of all of it.
As humans and as entrepreneurs, one of our biggest fears, I believe, is being wrong or not knowing the answer to something. As an entrepreneur, we have to be wrong, though. We just have to. It's something we have to do. Do you know or have you learned how to be wrong at stuff?
I'm great at being wrong.
Can you walk us through how to be wrong?
You know, I think that moment where you realize you're wrong, you just need to give yourself that space and permission to be like, okay, yeah, I was wrong. And what can I learn from it? I mean, instead of, you know, basically flogging yourself because, oh my gosh, I can't believe I did that. I look like an idiot. You know, that internal script that goes on there is just so unhealthy because everyone makes mistakes. And there's this whole idea in entrepreneurship, the more mistakes you make, the faster you're going to succeed. So mistakes are actually a good thing. So keep making them and just accept them for what they are. Look at them for learning lessons. I mean, if I look at the last year, I've made a lot of mistakes, but every single one of them, there has been something that has come out of it where I've been able to look at it and say, okay, I know for next time X, Y, or Z. And if someone else is involved, like, just fess up. It's like when you're a kid, it's always worse to deny it. You know, if you can just say, listen, I really dropped the ball here. I screwed this up. People will be a lot more forgiving because you're just being honest with them.
It's hard, though. It's hard. Although we know that we need to be kind of like have shamelessness and be able to be wrong, it's still a hard thing to do, right? But it seems that the more you can do it, the faster your success in your business moves ahead. So can you tell me what your biggest doubt or fear was on a project that you were currently in the middle of or the last project you completed?
Oh, I can tell you about this. I'm like literally in the midst of this. Like yesterday I had like probably a good 90 minutes of just complete and utter self-doubt. So I'm actually in the process of working with a web designer on a brand new website. And I'm really, really excited. But, you know, it's a big investment in my business, a necessary one. But there's a lot of, you know, upper limit tape issues that are coming up. Because, you know, even though I do copy and communication strategy all the time, figuring out what I'm going to have on my homepage is causing me so much pain. And I am just so uncomfortable. And it's not even a fear of being judged in this case. It's a fear of just getting it wrong because I know my current website works. So I'm like, what if I just go too far and then people get there and don't want to buy anything or work with me and they think I suck? Because if that happens, you've got big problems. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think a lot of it is just I had to kind of walk away from it and be like, okay, I just need like a night off to think. And I came back this morning. I started working with my designer and we're fine. You know, I just think that sometimes you have to go through those nasty, uncomfortable moments to get out the other side. It usually means the breakthrough is coming, even though during it, you were so uncomfortable.
I know. And I honestly don't know if you can go through a big project, like completely overhauling, like the website that houses your business without having those doubts at some point.
It's funny because one of the first things I did, the second I started to feel uncomfortable, because I'm used to feeling very confident in what I'm doing. So second, I reached out to one of my friends who does a lot of mindset coaching. And I said, oh my gosh, I have to talk to you. And by the time I got to talk to her later in the day, I'd kind of worked through it. But then her and I had had an entire conversation about, especially with a website, all the mindset issues that go into that, because it is your storefront. It is your public face. I mean, it's you. And it's a big, big thing. So it's actually something we're going to delve into a little bit more, her and I, and figure out how we can talk more about that. Because I think that a lot of times we feel like, oh, I'm crazy or I'm alone. And that's not really the case. We all go through these things as entrepreneurs.
Yeah, no, we definitely do. And so as an aside, you are a copywriter. You are, in your business, you are selling services to other people with businesses, right? That are probably having fears and struggles. How do you, as a copywriter, because this really fascinates me, copywriting, and I'm really no good at it, but I'm amazed by it, and your site is excellent for it. So how do you get into the head of, say, like your target, like customer, and know what their fears are and then how to hit them? How do you go about that as a process?
For me, a lot of it is just, it comes down to listening. So I think a lot of times, especially with copy, people start with the words, and the words are the vehicle. They're not, you know, you need to look at what are the emotions behind this? What kind of things are people saying? So there's a lot of kind of established processes and systems in the back end where I'm like, okay, let me do an analysis of how your competitors are talking about this. What kind of tone and manner is out there? How can you set yourself apart? And then, you know, things like, this is such a great tip for anyone who's working on their own copy. Go look at books on Amazon that are in your category and start to look at the reviews. What things are they saying were missing from the book? What did they like about the book? What were their takeaways from the book? Amazon reviews have a wealth of information right at our fingertips. So I'm working with one client right now on a kind of, we're doing a rebrand slash content strategy before we even get into the copy. And that's a big part of what we're doing. I'm like, hey, listen, this competitor, she's killing this. So what we can learn from it is this. We're not going to copy her, but, you know, there are takeaways. And oh my gosh, in these leadership books and Amazon, this is the kind of hot button language that people are using around these issues. So starting to bring that all together and then arriving at the words. I think a lot of times people think the words are the be all and all. And especially in entrepreneurial circles, I think that people write a lot of nonsense copy that people don't understand, or it's like so cute and quippy that it actually has no meaning. You're like, what do you do again? I don't really get it.
Wow. So Amazon, I've thought of Amazon for the books, but I've never thought of it actually for the reviews. And just... Yeah.
That's a legit, I didn't just make that up tactic. Like that's an actual like copywriting conversion tactic to start to really find that language and messaging that, you know, way people who would be your targets are talking about it already.
I like that. That's neat. So you do content strategy, which I'm assuming involves blogging for businesses and for like companies, right?
Content strategy is this big, big bucket. So for entrepreneurs, really, when we're looking at content strategy, a lot of times it's looking at how do you want your visitor to flow through your website? So, you know, do you want to blog on your homepage or do you want to drive them right into services? And how do we present the information? You know, what do you put in your menu? A lot of it, you want it to be very deliberate, not just what your designer tells you to do. So kind of planning that out. And then from a corporate point of view, when I do work with small kind of corporate clients, the content strategy usually pertains to something like a blog or a web show or something specific we really want to work on in terms of what's the message, what's the tone and manner, what's our mission with this before we get to the point of actually creating that content.
I guess I was getting to the blog because I really enjoy your blog. And it's great. And I'm shocked, actually, and kind of just recently starting these interviews. I'm at almost 20 interviews only at this point, but it's amazing the businesses and careers that have been started. And the sole reason they put it back to is that they just blogged. They blogged for years and years with nobody listening. And then all of a sudden it just sort of takes off. And then they start authoring books and getting like just amazing connections with people all through just writing on blogs, which I think people like thought the blog was dead years ago. Like it got really big and then it kind of, then there's like all the social media and people are like, oh, blogging's just, no, that's, people don't do that anymore, but people still do. And they're making and doing amazing things with it. And I mean, you even, you posted this morning already, like you have a very fresh blog that gets updated all the time. And I think that that's so key to businesses these days. And I think it's something that some people still do overlook, and the people that don't are really just knocking it out of the park with it. And it's really interesting to me.
I think that there's an interesting discussion though, like whether it be blogging or podcasting, it's, what is that vehicle for your audience to hear your voice, to connect with you, to get to know you, to start to trust you before you get to the point where you want to be doing business with them? Or if they're not doing business with you, how can you be serving them in the best way possible, even if there is never, ever going to be an exchange of money? If you are helping them build their business, I think, you know, if someone read my blog post today and they take one thing away and they don't make a bad investment, that's a win for me.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree 100%. All right, Maggie, this has been fun. I have one final question for you, please.
Sure.
Is there a book that continually comes back into your life to when you just need some inspiration or just kind of a kick in the butt to just get going again?
One book? Oh, I am like a voracious reader, so that's a hard one. I'm going to take the most typical copywriter answer. It's The Thesaurus. I like to look up words all the time. If wow. If I am stuck in my life, I'm like, what are some other words for this? And I mean, I literally use one every single day of Monday to Friday. It's out of my desk. It's going around the house with me, because if I'm working on copy, I don't want to just find a word. I want to find the best word.
Wow. That's one of the most interesting and coolest answers I've had for that question yet.
Delightfully geeky is what I would say that is.
Yeah, which actually I really admire, and that's really, really cool. So
yeah, I'm not going to be like, oh, it's the war of art. Everyone says those.
It's been said, yes. And yeah, it's an amazing book as well. But the thesaurus, and not even thesaurus.com. It's like an actual physical thesaurus. I like that.
Yeah, I'm actually looking at one right now. I have another one called The Well-Spoken One that does phrases. Oh. I highly recommend that one.
Awesome. The Well-Spoken. Okay. So we've talked a lot about you and your business, Maggie. Can you tell everybody where they should go and find out more about you and get your help?
You can find me over at maggiepatterson.com. And after the show, if you want to tweet me or you have questions, you can tweet at Mags Patterson.
Awesome. Yes, everybody should do that. I will include links in the show notes to you and your Twitter and to a thesaurus if anybody wants one. So thank you so much, Maggie. It's great to have a fellow Canadian and an entrepreneur that's out there really kicking butt.
Thanks, John. I really enjoyed our chat.
Awesome. Thank you. That was such a fun conversation with Maggie. The lady knows her stuff. And now it's time. Did you pick it out? Did you find it? I did. Let's do it. Let's find the hack.
What is that vehicle for your audience to hear your voice, to connect with you, to get to know you, to start to trust you before you get to the point where you want to be doing business with them? Or if they're not doing business with you, how can you be serving them in the best way possible, even if there is never, ever going to be an exchange of money? If you are helping them build their business, I think, you know, if someone read my blog post today and they take one thing away and they don't make a bad investment, that's a win for me.
And that's the hack. Maggie, so well said. And I agree, that's a win for me too. I think oftentimes people, maybe they think that if they create something and give it out there, whether it's a blog post, a book they write for Amazon and give away for free, or like a podcast, that if it doesn't turn into that person specifically buying something from you, that it's a failure. And I think that that's totally a wrong mindset. And I agree that if something I do, if I can somehow inspire somebody or teach them something about themselves or their business through Hack the Entrepreneur, and they go on to do something big, I do think that I hold value in that person. And whether that's monetized or not, I think it's irrelevant. I think the idea really should be just to help as many people go on to big, amazing, cool stuff as possible. I really do think that that's key. And I like what she said, because it's definitely a running theme in the guests I've had, if you haven't noticed. They almost always started out with a blog or a podcast or some means of letting people into their way of thinking about business and about life. And then those, they've built off that platform and built amazing, successful businesses. Whether it's a business blog that, say, WP Curve runs with Dan Norris, and that brings in people to their startup, or it's Chris Brogan, my first interview, where he literally just builds himself and his business and his speaking career off of his words. And I think that that's powerful. And I think that everybody needs to start doing that. Don't worry if you can't speak well, and just start a podcast, do it, or start a blog. It's really so easy, and it's something you have to do, and you won't get good at these things until you do them. So thank you so much for that, Maggie. I really, really, really love the way you said that. If you haven't yet, please check out the website, hacktheentrepreneur.com. Get on to my newsletter. Please hit the subscribe button at the top. The first email comes to you just to welcome you. Hit reply if you want. Tell me that you're out there. It'd be great. Let me know if I can help you in any way. I'm totally here to help. And I've had people emailing me already that are listeners of the show, and I totally appreciate that. And I am responding to you. That's what I want to be doing. So please subscribe to the newsletter, hit reply to any of those emails, and you come straight to my phone. Anywhere I am, I'll respond to you. And trust me, I'll help you in any way that I possibly can. Or just say hi, or I don't know, offer to buy me a beer or something next time I'm in town. I'd love it. So thank you so much. I truly do appreciate it. And until next time, keep hacking the entrepreneur.